What's up, guys? Welcome to the sesh. Today, I got a special guest, Alex. It's been a while since I talked to you, man. How long has it been?
I believe 3 years.
It's been 3 years.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot longer, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely was before the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So much has changed since then. The reason I got you on is because you are considered an expert in your field. And I love chatting with you. I love seeing the things that you're doing because you're always going to conferences. You're always doing stuff. You're always educating yourself. And I think that's a skill that a lot of people don't have. Why do you go and have continuous education?
Because I think then the world is changing every day. Every single day there is something new, a new discovery, something exciting happening, and I want to know about it, and I want to be able to understand what's going on. And so the reason why I love continuously being this training, certifications, conferences, is because I crave that knowledge. I crave that awareness. It's a different world. I mean, when you start exploring into a field, you realize that there is so much then you still don't know.
Yeah.
And so it becomes kind of like a progressively bigger goal, like learn more, expose yourself to more. And so it's exciting.
So for the people that don't know who you are and what you do, kind of explain a little bit about that.
Yes. So my name is Alex Garrido. I am the director of digital marketing and marketing analytics at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley. I'm also a faculty at the School of Business, and I teach marketing. And I also teach continuing education courses, professional development certifications, and I love every minute of it.
So let's dive right into it. I always hear this statistic, and it pops up every now and then. 10 to 12 million businesses will close every single year. That's a staggering number, and especially a lot of them in the Rio Grande Valley. So you having this digital marketing background and you being so versed in it, what do you see from your vantage point, and how can you help business owners? Like, what are some of the ideas that you can give business owners right now, specifically in the Rio Grande Valley?
Yeah.
What they can do to weather the storm?
Understand the changes. Understand the changes that are happening, both in terms of the psychology of the market, the psychology of everyday people, but also the technological trends, the things that are being completely thrown out of the window. For example, with these advancements in AI and the revolution that ChatGPT-4 was, now we need to think about things differently. Now we need to realize that in the past, the gatekeepers hold a lot of the power, and now that is being distributed more. That is more of a decentralized knowledge network. And with that, there comes a lot of other challenges that business owners need to be ready and able to face. So in terms of advice, keep up with the changes, keep up with the trends, stay informed. The most dangerous thing you can do is to stay in the same place, to assume that you can continue doing what you have been doing for all of these years and still somehow stay in business. I've seen so many businesses that I used to love close because they refuse to keep up with
adapt,
the times.
Yeah.
So it is challenging. It is definitely challenging. It is exciting as well. So yeah. I don't want to be the doom and gloom person.
Yeah, but it really is, man, because I talk to a lot of people, and when I talk about AI, people kind of just like brush it off. Like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not going to affect me. But it really is. At one point, it will, because the thing is that the businesses that are using them are going to replace the other businesses. The people that know how to use AI are going to take those other people's jobs. Like the advancement of like ChatGPT, when I started using it back in January, I used it for 2 to 3 hours a day for 3 months just to learn it. And I figured it was all about prompts. And then you start interacting with it. And when I would talk about it, like people are like, oh, you're cheating, dude. That's not you. It's like, what are your thoughts on that?
Specifically on ChatGPT?
Well, yeah, specifically for ChatGPT.
I encourage my students to use it as much as possible, but use it responsibly, because that's the thing that we need to work on in higher education, and all educational professionals. They need to learn how to use these technologies before they ban them, before they demonize them. They need to learn how to use them. And once you've learned how to use it, teach other people how to use them. And so, for example, with my students, I tell them, don't use it as your personal copyright infringement tool. Use it as your reflection tool. You wrote your essay, write it 100% on your own, submit it to ChatGPT, and ask ChatGPT to provide criticisms from the point of view of a professional in this field, provide a different perspective from a professional in this other field, get multiple points of view and see how you can enrich whatever you have written using those pieces of information, using that feedback. Never copy-paste anything from ChatGPT. Never, because that's lazy, and that's what scares a lot of people, that we are going to delegate thinking to machines, and to an extent, some of the computational power of the human mind is going to be delegated to some machines, but we cannot completely delegate your brain to a machine.
Yeah, it's interesting because the other day, we talk about dopamine hits, right? You get from social media and stuff like that, and I was using ChatGPT. And there's two instances that I've clicked and it gave me the answer right away. And I felt that dopamine hit. I'd never felt that before. It was so powerful. I was like, fuck, like, what is that? It was a dopamine hit.
Yeah.
I've gotten it twice from ChatGPT and I was like, why am I getting that? Uh-huh. It's because the information is so instant and I didn't have to think about it.
Right.
So it's a very scary thing for somebody like me because I'm in it all the time and I'm using it all the time. So what do you see like the downfalls of that being something like that, like me using it so much? I remember I was using it so much at one point. It sent me a prompt back saying, go outside, take a breath. Go. So
like,
stop using me for a while, man. So what are your thoughts on that, man? Because I find it fascinating because I know somebody else out there is using it just as much as I am.
Yes.
And they're using it to their benefit. So I don't want to be left behind. What are your thoughts on that?
Use it, but don't outsource your opinion to ChatGPT.
Okay.
Don't outsource your thinking, your rationale, your own creative process. Don't outsource it to ChatGPT. Use ChatGPT as an instrument of reflection. That is the most powerful thing. ChatGPT itself is not a cognitive machine. It's not capable of fully understanding the implications of what it's saying. To an extent, you can say it, and neither do humans, but we like to assume we do. But ChatGPT will not understand all the nuances of your day-to-day life. And that's where you need to be a critical thinker and approach ChatGPT as an instrument to enhance your current capabilities. One of my favorite prompts is the console prompt. So basically what you do is it's a structured prompt. But you basically ask ChatGPT to create a console of experts around an area. Mm. And each expert has its own personality. Each expert has its own way of thinking. Then when you look at it from a vantage point, it looks like the ideal console to make a recommendation on an issue. And so you can use that console and ask questions and get multiple perspectives to get feedbacks on your ideas. Of course, also talk to other humans and other experts. But sometimes, you know what? I might not have access to a neurobiologist. I might not get access to the latest in one of the social science fields. I mean, it's just a way to expand your horizons. And what I find myself is sometimes I will get something from ChatGPT, and I will go on my own and like, okay, recommend me a book to learn more about that topic, or tell me which podcast I should subscribe to and specifically addresses this issue. And because I'm using ChatGPT through Bing, which is the Microsoft product, Bing now is integrated with ChatGPT-4. It has real-time access to the data. I also have the Plus version, so it also has browsing access.
Yeah, and also has the plugins too. The plugins are pretty cool. I've used Yabble to get the customer insights and client insights and all that stuff. It's a very powerful tool for research. I find myself in it, and I just keep on going through. And it's like, okay, I need to stop, man, because at one point you actually have to work. So I find myself just fascinated with it. But what else do you see from the AI artificial intelligence community? Because I know you're always in it.
Yeah.
What's fascinating that you see right now?
I am particularly scared right now. Early adopters will get it and it will be fine. But I'm scared for the people who are being left behind. I'm scared for the people who are not exposing themselves to these changes because they don't know what's going on. The other day, I was reading a story where a lady got a phone call from her daughter or dad. Was it dad? Or I don't remember exactly. But and it sounded just like her daughter. And it was something along the lines of, I need you to make a deposit because they kidnapped me. And this person was going through the motions of sending that money. Wow. And they was going through the motions because they believed it. We have reached a point, and you know what? You have a few TikTok videos out there. You have a few Instagram reels over there. I'm going to grab a sample of your voice. I'm going to use AI to mimic your voice and call your parents, call your family members, call your elderly parents, and tell them that you got into an accident and they need to deposit to this account and they need to send a money order or check. And we're not ready to that because, I guess we have gotten used to the like typical scams, like you get an email and all of that. And even those, some people still unfortunately fall for those, but we have gotten used to. Now imagine it's literally your daughter.
Voice.
Calling you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, you have no way of knowing that it's not your daughter.
Yeah.
Or a video. I was trying to get you a deep fake of you, but it's not ready yet. This is still rendering.
Oh, that would be cool, man.
Yeah. But it's basically now you can make anybody to say anything.
Yeah, it's crazy, man, because the other day I started working with one of my clients, and I was like, can I, with his permission, of course, because I'm always for the ethical way of doing things because I can see how this technology can be used for bad.
Yeah.
So I asked him if I can put in his voice into a Play HT or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it downloaded about 20 minutes of his voice, and I had him read the script and all that stuff. So with it, there was some little imperfections, but this is just the beginning. Like, it's insane because he no longer has to come in here and record in front of me. It's the craziest thing in the world to me is like how fast this stuff is going. And people really don't even know that it's available. That's the scary part.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm writing an article, and I want to make sure that it gets attention about having a seed phrase or a passkey mm-hmm. with your friends and family members so that you know when, for real, your daughter needs you to send money because she got into an issue, or your brother, your sister, your friend. A seed phrase is a concept from cryptocurrencies and crypto in general, where both of you have like a secret phrase that you share, and that way you can verify that the person is who he or she claims to be.
Yeah.
And so we need to think about those things. We need to think about, you know what, if you're going to be asking for money, always mention this, because that way I will know that it's for real you.
Yeah.
Now I cannot trust your voice.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the strangest thing about that, too, is just go back to two-factor authentication. Like, nobody has it. And we talk about it all the time. It's like, dude, like, social media needs to be secured.
Yeah.
And people still lose their accounts, and we talk about it over and over and over again. What is it about it that people just won't do it? Is it just because it hasn't happened to them?
Maybe. It's changing too fast. In all fairness, it's changing too fast. Not everybody, like I said myself as the example, I was one of the early Google Glass explorers. So I actually had the Google Glasses on the very first generation, the very first time. The Google Glasses is this failed Google experiment, and but I was one of them. I get excited about technology, but it takes a very special kind of person to be excited about technological changes and keeping up with innovation and changes. The vast majority of people, they just want to go on with their life. Right. They're not looking for, like, what's the latest disruption happening. And so I think that maybe that has something to do. It's very draining. If it doesn't excite you, it's very draining to be constantly thinking about these things.
You're absolutely right, because I mean, I'm from the world of digital marketing, and I dive into tech and all that stuff. So I just assume that everybody else knows about it. Yeah. And that's just not the case. And I think a lot of people think that way too. It's like, if you're not doing it, well, I mean, too bad.
Yeah.
So like, I'm in it. I assume everybody's in it. Everybody's in it. And that's just not the case. Like, there's a huge digital divide here in the Rio Grande Valley. Can you kind of touch on that? Because I think when it comes to education and information, like, that alone is a huge indicator of, like, success. What do you see from your vantage point?
The digital divide in the Rio Grande Valley. It is very big. It's very pervasive. But it's also very different. Looking at market research from other communities, cell phone adoption in the Rio Grande Valley is actually higher, smartphone adoption is actually higher than in some of the metropolitan areas in San Antonio or even Austin. So we do have a very, very widespread cell phone adoption here in the Valley. Maybe not desktop, but yes, cell phone. I kind of got to see that firsthand because my team was in charge of developing the vaccine portal for the first wave of vaccine distributions for the COVID vaccine. And we created this simplified app form where people could subscribe to receive the information. And initially we assumed, because of the market research data says desktop, if you are serving people with this demographic profile, desktop is gonna be the best place. And yeah, maybe that's true over there up north, but mm-hmm. here in the Valley, the vast majority of people, even if you don't have a laptop, even if you don't have an iPad, even if you have a smartphone, mm-hmm. it becomes kind of like your device, this is your computer. And so that was very insightful for me because, again, originally we designed the portal to be desktop friendly first, but it needed to be mobile friendly absolutely first.
Interesting.
And we also got to realize that it requires a little bit more of explanation. When developing this portal, we were constantly iterating to the app, to the web portal version. And so we will get feedback, real-time feedback from people. It's like, I'm having issues submitting it, I'm having issues. So that really opened up my eyes to the different demographic profiles that we have and the technology use. But in terms of what can we do to help bridge that gap, I think that we're doing a lot. And I think that economics development corporations, through the skill training programs that they're offering, the university with some of the new initiatives that they're embarking. I mean, we're trying, and I think we're bridging it. In that sense, I'm optimistic. I don't think we're in such a bad place.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. And let me ask you this. I was talking with Judge Richard Cortez, and he was saying that a lot of people give their opinion, but they never offer solutions. So maybe you haven't a solution for this with that data that you said. How do we track illegal immigration here in the Valley? Like, if you were just to think off the top of your head, like with the app that you had, with the simplified app, with the smartphone, mm-hmm. if you had an idea to be able to track immigration, if people are here illegally, how would you do it?
I'll have to think about it.
Okay, we'll get back to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is a very interesting thing, because he was saying that 20% on top of the population that is here illegally. That's a lot of people. It's like 200,000 some people mm-hmm. across the Rio Grande Valley. So I find that fascinating. It's like, how do you track those people? How do you give them the funds that they need to be able to survive and be able to have a good life here in the Rio Grande Valley? Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting thing. So I'd like to touch back on that. Mm-hmm. As far as AI, what do you see AI pushing the boundaries here, specifically in the Rio Grande Valley? How do you see artificial intelligence impacting the Rio Grande Valley, and what industries is it going to impact?
What industries will it impact? Pretty much everything. In terms of process automation, robotic process automation, the maquiladoras are already starting to implement some of these advancements in machine learning and optimization algorithms. And so we're producing more, faster, better, improving systems, developing this systems thinking mentality, and seeing connections that perhaps they're hard to notice at first glance. That's where machine learning really and AI really has the most contributions to bring. In terms of small business disruption, it could be as simple as invoicing, keeping track of comments, replying to social media, messaging, live chats, outsourcing a portion of customer service as well to that, operations. It could really touch, has the potential, everything.
Wow, that's insane because just so much that it could do. Like when you can create a chatbot specifically for a website that'll answer every single question. It's just like for one of the ways I've been doing is scraping all the data from websites and all the reviews and all that stuff and putting it into ChatGPT. And now it's my business partner for that specific business. Like I don't think people understand that you can do that. And now you have a database. Simplified database of all your business. It's pretty insane.
Well, and ChatGPT is actually coming out with long-term memory with the Pinecone integration. And so Pinecone is a vector database. It's just basically a way to store information faster so that you can have long conversations. Because if you notice, if you have a long conversation with ChatGPT, it starts getting dumb. Mm-hmm. And that's because it reaches a point of like, okay, you saturated the memory of the system. You reach that point where it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make coherent sense. But now with this new integration, it will have long-term memory. So that's actually pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, it is because I remember I was chatting with ChatGPT, and then at one point I was like, "Oh, this makes no sense, man. Yeah. What is going on here?" I found that he uses the tokens and all that stuff based off of that. So that's a little bit more advanced. But one of the things that I also wanted to touch about was your diet. I'm super fascinated in this because I've been on my journey, my fitness journey, for about a year and 3 months, and I know you do keto. So talk about that, dude. I find that interesting.
So I struggle a lot losing weight. I mean, it was a very challenging thing for me. I tried everything at that point, about 5-6 years ago, and just couldn't lose weight. And I started giving keto a try, and that worked phenomenally for me. And I do smart keto because I think then a lot of people assume like, oh, just eat bacon or just have a lot of cheese and fats. And no, smart keto really requires you to become educated about what keto really is and what you are really trying to accomplish. And so as with everything then I obsess about, I started reading a lot of books. David Perlmutter is one of the best authors in the field. Brain Grain. The Keto Reset Diet, Fat Chance, I think it was Fat Chance. There's a few very useful books than I read, and that's how I started getting into keto, and it has worked great. I have been able to keep off the weight, and honestly, I wouldn't leave it. Occasionally, I break. You are supposed to kind of break your keto diet eventually at intervals so that you can have kind of that reset period so that you have enough metabolic flexibility. But I try to make that very brief because the minute I eat more than 50 grams of carbs, I'm going to be knocked out. I'm going to be like sleepy all day and I just need to rest that day. And then once I get back into keto, into producing ketones, I am good. But again, keto is not for everyone.
Right.
If you are type 1 diabetic, it literally can kill you. No, keto, I mean, keto worked great for me because I actually found out that I had a mild version of celiac disease. So gluten was really, like, was really bad for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that until I was, like, on keto, and that could be one of the reasons why keto works so well for me, because it completely puts me aside from gluten.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another benefit. You don't get gluten.
And what about your exercise routine? Touch on that.
Honestly, it's just an hour of exercise a day. I am not very strict on what to do. I just, as long as I...
You're active.
Go to the gym and I sweat a little bit, I'm fine. And so that's kind of a mental compromise that I make to myself, so that even if I'm super tired, even if I'm I don't really feel like it, it's like, okay, I'm just gonna go, just gonna do cardio, watch a show while I'm doing cardio, and or listen to an audiobook or whatever, and then that's it. As long as I did something to stay active on that day, it works.
The reason I ask you is because I saw a YouTube video with Jesse James West saying that we live in the fattest city in the nation. Mm-hmm. We live in the fattest city in the United States. Mm-hmm. What do you feel when I say that?
It's pretty sad. It's the confluence of the worst of two cultures. Unfortunately, the Mexican culture, it's all about sweet. It's all about coming together. I'm Mexican, so I know my culture. It's all about you eat as a family gathering, bonding mechanism. You attribute all of these positive things to eating together with family. You don't reject things that they cook for you. If you go to many cities in Mexico, the very first thing that they're going to offer you is a bottle of Coke. Like Coca-Cola, it's the default kind of token of appreciation, of showing you that I care for you. And so we have this ingrained from our culture. And also there is this comedian, and she makes fun of this. Almost everything is a variation of a tortilla in the Mexican culture. So enchiladas, sopes, like almost gorditas, Tlayutlas, Oaxaca has these huge tortillas. But almost everything is a tortilla in different shapes, ways, and forms. And so carbs, very carby. Mexican food is very carby. And American food, it's also very carby, but it's also very high in fat. Fast food is very high in fat to make it appealing and very high in the bad kind of fats. And so we have the confluence of two cultures, and that's what happens.
The recipe for disaster, yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing because before I started my workouts and exercise journey, is like, I didn't care what I ate. I was having a good time, and I noticed that I would get super lethargic during the day and tired and all that stuff. So when we started training, and I know why it's so hard to keep it up long term, because you don't see results right away. So it took me at least 6 months to start seeing some results that I was like, oh, okay, I'll do this longer. Mm-hmm. But it takes so damn long to get to that point. Like, what was it for you that you kept on going? What shift in your mind that had to happen?
So I am a questioner. So as long as a questioner, there is this book called The Four Tendencies. Which everybody has a tendency before they do something, they have a tendency of association. Whether or not you can meet outer or inner expectations depends on the tendency that you have. And in that, I am a questioner. So as long as I understand the why, as long as I have a strong enough why, I will do almost everything, anything. The fact that before I even get started with the keto diet, I literally brainwashed myself, immersing myself into the world of what the keto diet is, what do they do, what are the disadvantages, what are the common criticisms, how do people in the field counter the criticisms, and a little bit even on the conspiracy theory that the sugar industrial complex is trying to put high fructose corn syrup into everything, and like even diving into that so that I had enough of a wide perspective to the point that it literally became illogical to me to actually continue eating junk food. Like, it became illogical, and I cannot stand illogical things.
Yeah.
And so everybody has different modes of operation in that sense. Some people, they're having an accountability partner, the obligers. Having an accountability partner will help them significantly. So having somebody that says, you know what, if you don't go to the gym, I am not going to the gym. The fact that you know that somebody else is expecting you to be there, they're going to have a harder time not to go to the gym. So they can meet outer expectations. It's hard for them to meet inner expectations. You also have the upholders, which is like rules-based. So as long as they publish on Facebook, I am going to the gym every day for this week. As long as they publish it, as long as they proclaim it, as long as it's written or there is a record of it existing, the upholders, they love following rules. And so you already said it, you need to do it.
Yeah.
And then the rebels, which is the challenging part, because for rebels, it needs to be a challenge. It needs to be like, that's actually the hardest one to motivate to do things, because even they themselves find themselves kind of struggling.
What's an example of a rebel? So give me the thoughts and the things that they would say specifically.
I'm not going to do it if you ask me to do it.
Gotcha.
And so it's like almost everything needs to be a challenge for a rebel. So it's like, you know what? Forget it. I don't believe you're ever going to be able to lose weight because you're not the kind of person that puts effort into those kind of things. So you're not going to be able to lose weight. So I don't expect you to lose weight. Hmm. That will trigger the rebels like, I'm going to prove you wrong. Huh. And then they will do it. But yeah, that's a challenging one. The rebels are challenging.
It's interesting because that even happens. So like, for example, like I have found that there's a lot more people who just want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. Do you see that in your industry or anywhere?
Almost everybody, yeah.
Yeah, and it's almost easier just as a business to give them exactly what they want and like, here you go. And it becomes irrefutable proof. Like, here you go. Like, I handed you all this. This is exactly what you wanted.
Yes.
And boom, here you go. Like, there's a lot of people like that, right?
Right.
So can you touch on that? Because I feel like that's kind of where the world is going, especially with technology, when we have instant gratification for every single thing. Yes. Can you kind of correlate that with the industry?
It's actually very interesting because with the excessive customization of everything, now we have that expectation of everything needs to be customized for me. Everything needs to come pre-digested. Don't make me think. It's actually a title of a really good book as well. Don't make me think about user experience design. But it's basically that. It's about reduce cognitive friction as much as possible because people are busy, people have interests. They're not usually able to sit down and have that conscious, rational process. Most of us go throughout our days in autopilot mode. And so it takes a special kind of person not to be on that autopilot mode.
Yeah, it's hard to gather your thoughts, especially as a business owner, for anybody, because there's so much going on. It's like, what do I focus on? Like for me, I have shiny object syndrome where I was like, oh, I want to do this because I was good at this one thing. I can do this. I know I can do this.
Yeah.
And I noticed that I was starting to suck at everything because I was trying to take on so much.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, you know what? Let me refocus and focus on this one thing. And since then, I've been doing very well.
That's awesome.
So it's very hard to get to that point, though, because it takes so long. It takes a lot of introspective work. Like, I'm not good at these things. I should not go after that. And as the ego will always come back and like, no, you can do that. You can do that. You can do that. In reality, you really can't because there simply is not enough time.
Yeah.
It's a super interesting thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about marketing. Mm-hmm. Marketing for businesses. I feel like there's core things that business owners need to know. And marketing is that one of them. And obviously how to run your business. But kind of touch on marketing as far as for businesses. Like, how do you view marketing specifically?
It really depends on the business. But marketing is the discipline of having a strategy and a philosophy of getting people to know your product, of making people fall in love with your product, exposing your idea, your service, your thoughts, your object to other people. That's, in a nutshell, what marketing is getting them to feel your brand, experience your product, to have a personal connection. In a way, we all are marketers. We are marketing ourselves even when we don't consciously are doing it. Like you dress certain ways because there are certain messages you want to communicate. That's, in a way, marketing. You're trying to get people to perceive certain elements of your personality, certain elements of your daily life, of your of who you are. Same thing for a business. Marketing is creating experiences for people that make them fall in love with your brand. That's the easiest way to understand it.
So give me an example of like how a business here in the Rio Grande Valley would do it. So give me a specific, like, let's say a restaurant or a med spa or something like that. Kind of give me three different industries and give me a strategy for each one.
Okay. So I am very biased because I am a digital native, and so I don't default to the traditional printed media or TV and radio. And so I default to digital. So in terms of a restaurant, what is marketing for a restaurant? Marketing for a restaurant should be about showcasing what makes you unique. There's a million restaurants, and now in the Valley we have amazing restaurants. Yeah. And so why your amazing restaurant is the restaurant I want to go. Why do you offer a differentiated experience? Why do you offer a unique moment? I think that even post-COVID, I'm seeing that even more. People are looking for experiences. More than transactions, more than I just need something to eat, people want to feel an experience. People want to pay for the experience, for the connection. That's why team restaurants, the restaurants that focus on one ambience or one topic team, tend to be very successful post-COVID because they offer that unique, differentiated experience. We no longer want to pay just for food. We want to pay for the entire experience. And so the more you're able to convey that story through your social media, your digital ads, the more you're able to convey that story and the more you're able to bring people in, even if they're not in your restaurant, bring people in, at least in their mind, the more successful you're going to be.
And the greatest part about that is you can charge a premium price because people will pay more money for an experience.
Yeah.
It's the most fascinating thing. But then now you're asking the business owner, well, let me think of something else on top of the food that I already have to buy every single month, on top of all the employees that I have. So it's like you're making them think more. And I feel like that's a reason why a lot of businesses fail. Maybe, and I might be as bold as saying that, maybe some businesses just aren't good enough. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong to say that? Or because I feel that a business is led by a business owner. And a business owner is human. They have the same tendencies that every other human being has in the world. So they look at this one thing and they're like, I'm going to do it this way. And that's it.
Yeah.
So I feel like sometimes, just as some human beings aren't that great at things,
right,
there's going to be businesses like that. Am I wrong?
No, for sure. I mean, it requires a different mindset. Now, the other piece of marketing is connecting with the right audience. Some restaurants, they don't necessarily, might not need to do marketing on their own because you know what? They have the best damn birria tacos in the Rio Grande Valley and word of mouth marketing is enough.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, word of mouth, ideally, that's what you want, other people to brag about your experience. And so connecting to the right audience, connected to the right influencers, saves a lot of restaurants from having to think about marketing. And yeah. So everybody's hoping to win the lottery in that sense. Everybody's hoping to find that one influencer that will come to your place and will make it grow and explode and talk about it and brag about it. And yeah, we all hope for that. But hope is not a strategy.
All right, so let's talk about price because I feel like a lot of people, like a lot of business owners, don't really understand how marketing works and what it costs. And that's also the advertising aspect of it. Like for, let's use Facebook and Instagram. So when you're pushing out ads, this is one cost, marketing is another cost. If business owner to come up to you right now and say, how much do I spend on marketing? How much do I spend on advertising? What would you tell them?
Depends. It really depends on what are you trying to accomplish. When we first started at the university with the clinics, the clinics is UT Health RGV is the clinical component, the clinical enterprise of the School of Medicine. And so we have medical doctors teaching our students, but we also have medical doctors, board certified, fellowship trained doctors, also providing services to the community, also providing healthcare to the community through UT Health, our clinics. And so when we first started promoting our clinics, when we first started promoting the first 10 clinics that we opened, our cost per acquisition on digital channels was very high. It was very high, around about 100 and something to acquire a new potential patient for the clinics. And so at the beginning, it was very high. Now it has come to a point where we have gotten so good at understanding the needs of our community than where cost per acquisition is significantly lower, around $30 to $40.
Wow. 70% less.
Yeah, but it took years of understanding the audience, what resonates with them, what kind of ads drive the most call to actions, what kind of engagement they like to see. And it changes. Like, I can tell you, the people on Norma Callen, they react to different content than the people in Weslaco or San Juan. They prefer to make a phone call. People over here, they rather fill out a form. I mean, you need to understand your audience very well to be able to define that. And so I don't have an amount. It depends on what you're trying to do. If you just want people to download a free item, maybe $100 a month will be enough. Yeah. But if you want people to trust you with their primary healthcare needs, you're probably going to have to pay more.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it interesting because I always get that question, like, well, how much should I spend? It was like, spend as much as you possibly can right now, because, I mean, you want to reach the most people, mm-hmm. and awareness is at the top of the funnel. It's like, yeah. you need to get your product and service awareness first, because mm-hmm. if you don't talk about your product, no one's going to know about it.
Right.
And if you don't have people talking about your product in person, nobody's going to talk about it.
Right.
So I feel like that's one of the things that keeps a lot of business owners like, They're so scared about investing in something that they know or they don't know that's going to have a return. Have you seen that in the past?
Yeah, of course.
So kind of touch on that, because I kind of want to put business owners at ease, because I feel the same way. When I'm putting money into Facebook ads, I'm getting a return on the end.
Yeah.
But it's always that initial part. It's like you're investing all this money in it, uh-huh. and you don't know what's going to happen.
No. So I am the person that shifted the university funds for traditional advertising. So I am the one that had to have those conversations with all of the administration about, like, hey, traditional, and this was me 10 years ago, traditional advertising is dying, even though at that point probably it was at its peak. It's going to be dying soon. It's going to be, and I had to do that convincing. But the advantage that advertising and digital advertising, digital marketing in particular, has is that everything is trackable. Online, everything is trackable. And so you can directly attribute that conversion, that form submission, that sign up, that business visit, that purchase, you can directly attribute it to maybe that person saw an ad, and after seeing that ad, they actually went and clicked on that. Online, everything is trackable. And I think that one of the barriers than a lot of people have is they don't understand that. They don't understand that, no, you're not wasting your money. You would know if you actually drove that click because of an ad. You have a way of knowing. And the analytics portion, the data portion, is the part that I think that not enough people understand. Yeah. Especially now with Google Analytics 4, which we have 8 days or 7 days. We have 8 or 7 days today to migrate from Universal Analytics to Google Analytics 4. Analytics 4 has a user profile modeling that allows you to get signals from that user from all over. So you can create a bucket that says converters, mm-hmm. and then analyze the converters based on specific patterns of behavior. Like, before converting, did you read 3 blog posts? Did you visit this page? Did you do this? Did you do that? And then you can create a full funnel understanding of your audience. And that's actually very powerful. And I don't know I must like it. Most business owners don't know that that is possible.
Yeah, it's just a, I think it's a lack of the education and information aspect, because I think at one point it was like 12 touch points that somebody has to go through to be able to make an action. And that's not even a sale. That's mm-hmm. just to like go to the website or yeah. something like that. So kind of touch on that, because the customer journey is one of the most important ones. Like they're, some of them can see an ad and go directly into it, yeah. but a lot more people need convincing. Can you kind of dive into that, please?
Depends on the kind of person. Again, everything is marketing. In my mind, everything is marketing. So that's why it's hard to like concretize it into one thing. Because, for example, using the four tendencies model, some people are going to question everything, and they're going to read the reviews. They are going to visit multiple pages. They're going to watch YouTube videos before purchasing a pair of headphones. Some people are going to be like, my friend got this pair of headphones, and they like them. Some people are going to be by the rules. They're going to look at the specifications. I specifically want a set of headphones that has these features. Does it meet that criteria? And the rebels, I don't know how they purchase this. anyways, so everybody has different tendencies when it comes to interacting with things online. And so you need to appeal to your different audiences. Everybody's going to have a different customer journey. Some people take more time convincing, some people are ready to marry after dating a person for 1 week.
Yeah.
Some people wait 10, 11, 20 years before marrying that person. So it really depends. And so it depends on your audience. It depends on who you're trying to attract. Of course, the cost of what you're trying to sell may also play a role. Twitter lately is full of like very cheap gadgets and items. Honestly, it's like, okay, it's just $10. I might as well buy it. Right. It piqued my interest enough. It's just $10, for example. So it really depends.
Interesting. With all the insight that you have, what are the platforms that people are using most here in the Valley, like social platforms?
We haven't conducted this year's social media survey. We conduct a survey of the entire Valley to understand what is the Valley's behavior. But based on the data from last year, I can tell you that the vast majority of people here, they're using mostly Instagram, Facebook occasionally. They haven't migrated away from Facebook, but they're using it less. They're using more specialized services on Facebook, like Marketplace, like La Pulga del Valle is huge, of course. Mm-hmm. And they're using more specialized services within Facebook, but not Facebook as a feed anymore, gotcha. Not as much. And then Instagram is the king. TikTok, it's very, very big as well. Maybe almost at the same level as Instagram. Instagram is still higher. And then Snapchat, I mean, it used to be very big, but most people are not willing to engage with brands on Snapchat anymore. So that's a bit of a challenge. Twitter. Twitter. Twitter was never a thing in the Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, you had like at least 100 people actively tweeting in the Valley. I think now it's like a little bit less. But I do like it because I never tweet, but the consumption of media now, honestly, is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. It's the content on my Twitter profile. It's way better than anything that I see on Instagram or Facebook.
Interesting. The reason, what are the age demographics that you're seeing for each platform?
So, of course, the younger audiences, they tend to gravitate more to Instagram and TikTok.
What's the age range, would you say?
Everything that we do it has to be over 18. So 18 to 25, they're predominantly, actually 18 to 35, actually. They're primarily using that. Maybe the 35 and over, not as much on TikTok. The older you are, the more likely you are to only use Facebook. That's another thing. That's actually the fastest growing demographic nationally on Facebook, older audiences.
Interesting. Huh. Alex, it's always been insightful having you on, man. How are you all using, before we finish off, how are you all using AI at the university?
As with everything, we're still trying to figure it out. We are trying to infuse innovation, but of course, safety first. And thinking about safety first, and the advantage that we have is we are integrated with the Microsoft suite of products. And so, for example, we get ChatGPT through the Edge browser, the Microsoft browser. So we'd have access to ChatGPT. We have access to Power BI, which is the data analytics platform that Microsoft offers, the competitor to Tableau. It offers automatic data analysis, and it provides you insights and all of that. So we're using it through Microsoft, which kind of has all the data protection that we need for the institution.
Awesome. This is amazing, man. So everybody, we'd like to thank you all for coming to the session. Alex, man, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your insights and your knowledge, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
See you guys next time. Peace. Perfect, man.